Chapter 14. Hester and the Physician. Hester bade Little Pearl run down to the margin of the water and play with the shells and tangled seaweed until she should have talked a while with yonder gatherer of herbs, Chillingworth. So the child flew away like a bird, and making bare her small white feet, went pattering along the moist margin of the sea. Here and there she came to a full stop and peeped curiously into a pool, left by the retiring tide as a mirror for Pearl to see her face in. Forth peered at her out of the pool, with dark, glistening curls around her head, and an elfish smile in her eyes, the image of a little maid, whom Pearl, having no other playmate, invited to take her hand and run a race with her. But the visionary little maid, on her part, beckoned likewise, as if to say, "This is a better place! Come thou into the pool!" And Pearl, stepping in, mid-leg, deep, beheld her own white feet at the bottom, while, out of a still lower depth, came the gleam of a kind of fragmentary smile, floating to and fro in the agitated water. Meanwhile, her mother had accosted the physician. "I would speak a word with you," said she, "a word that concerns us much. "Aha! It is Mistress Hester that has a word for old Roger Chillingworth," answered he, raising himself from his stooping posture. "With all my heart. Why, mistress, I hear good tidings of you on all hands. No longer ago than yester-eve, a magistrate, a wise and good godly man, was discoursing of your affairs, Mistress Hester, and whispered me that there had been question concerning you in the council. It was debated whether or no, with safety to the common weal, yon scarlet letter might be taken off your bosom. On my life, Hester, I made my entreaty to the worshipful magistrate that it might be done forthwith." So the high-up people in town, the powerful people in town, are debating whether or not she should take off the scarlet letter. And he's advocating for it to happen, so she can get rid of it. "It lies not in the pleasure of the magistrates to take off this badge," calmly replied Hester. "Were I worthy to be quit of it, it would fall away of its own nature, or to be transformed into something that should speak a different purport. So it's not up to them to take it off." "Nay, then, wear it, if it suit you better," rejoined he. "A woman must needs follow her own fancy, touching the adornment of her person. The letter is gaily embroidered, and shows right bravely on your bosom." And he's like, "Okay, wear it if you want, I guess." All this while, Hester had been looking steadily at the old man, and was shocked, as well as wonder-smitten, to discern what a change had been wrought upon him within the past 7 years. It was not so much that he had grown older, for though the traces of advancing life were visible, he wore his age well, and seemed to retain a wiry vigor and alertness. But the former aspect of an intellectual and studious man, calm and quiet, which was what she best remembered in him, had altogether vanished, and had been succeeded by an eager, searching, almost fierce, yet carefully guarded look. It seemed to be his wish and purpose to mask this expression with a smile, but the latter played him false, and flickered over his visage so derisively that the spectator could see his blackness all the better for it. Ever and anon, too, there came a glare of red light out of his eyes, as if the old man's soul were on fire, and kept on smoldering duskily within his breast, until by some casual puff of passion it was blown into a momentary flame. This he repressed as speedily as possible, and strove to look as if nothing of the kind had happened. In a word, old Roger Chillingworth was a striking evidence of man's faculty of transforming himself into a devil, if he will only, for a reasonable space of time, undertake a devil's office. This unhappy person had effected such a transformation by developing himself for 7 years to the constant analysis of a heartful of torture, and deriving his enjoyment thence, and adding fuel to those fiery tortures which he analyzed and gloated over. The scarlet letter burned on Hester's bosom. Here was another ruin, the responsibility of which came partly home to her, so she feels responsible for his decay. "What see you in my face?" asked the physician, "that you look at it so earnestly." "Something that would make me weep, if there were any tears bitter enough for it," answered she. "But let it pass. It is of yonder miserable man that I would speak."
"And what of him?" cried Roger Chillingworth eagerly, as if he loved the topic, and were glad of an opportunity to discuss it with the only person of whom he could make a confidant. "Not to hide the truth, Mrs. Chester, my thoughts happen just now to be busy with the gentleman, so we speak freely, and I will make the answer."
"When we last spake together," said Hester, "now 7 years ago, it was your pleasure to extort a promise of secrecy as touching the former relation betwixt yourself and me. As the life and good fame of yonder man were in your hands, there seemed no choice to me save to be silent in accordance with your behest."
excuse me, yet it was not without heavy misgivings, and I thus bound myself, for having cast off all duty towards other human beings, there remained a duty towards him, and something whispered me that I was betraying it, and pledging myself to keep your counsel, keep your secret. Since that day, no man is so near to him as you. You tread behind his every footstep. You are beside him, sleeping and waking. You search his thoughts. You burrow and rankle in his heart. Your clutch is on his life, and you cause him to die daily a living death, and still he knows you not. In permitting this, I have surely acted a false part by the only man to whom the power was left to me to be true. What choice had you? Asked Roger Chillingworth, my finger pointed at this man, who would have hurled him from his pulpit into a dungeon. Thence, peradventure, to the gallows. "It had better been so," said Hester Prynne. "It would have been better if Dimmesdale had gone to jail for his sin than the reality that they're all living in right now." "What evil have I done the man?" asked Roger Chillingworth again. "I tell you, Hester Prynne, the richest fee that ever physician earned from Marner could not have brought such care as I have wasted on this miserable priest. But for my life, his aid would have burned away in torrents. With the first 2 years after perpetration of his crime and thine. For Hester, his spirit lacked the strength that could have borne up, as yours has, beneath a burden like the scarlet letter. Oh, I could reveal a goodly secret, but enough, what art can do, I have exhausted on him. That he now breathes and creeps about on earth is owing all to me." "Better he had died at once," said Hester Prynne. "Yeah, woman, you say true," cried old Roger Chillingworth, letting the lurid fire of his heart blaze out before her eyes. "Better he had died at once. Never did mortal suffer what this man has suffered. And all in the sight of his worst enemy. He has been conscious of me. He has known me. He has felt an influence dwelling always upon him like a curse. He knew, by some spiritual sense, for the Creator never made another being so sensitive as this, he knew that no friendly hand was pulling at his heartstrings, and that an eye was looking curiously into him, which sought only evil and found it. But he knew not that the eye and hand were mine. With the superstition common to his brotherhood, he fancied himself given over to a devil to be tortured with frightened dreams and desperate thoughts, the sting of remorse and despair of pardon, as a foretaste of what awaits him beyond the grave. But it was the constant shadow of my presence, the closest propinquity of the man whom he had most vilely wronged, and who had grown to exist only by this perpetual poison of the direst revengeance. Yeah, indeed, he did not err. There was a devil at his elbow. A mortal man, with once a human heart, has become a devil for his especial torment. The unfortunate physician, while uttering these words, lifted his hands with a look of horror, as if he had beheld some frightful shape, which he could not recognize, usurping the place of his own image in a glass, in a mirror. It was one of those moments which sometimes occur only at the interval of years, when a man's moral aspect is faithfully revealed to his mind's eye. Not improbably he had never before viewed himself as he did now. "Have you not tortured him long enough?" said Hester, noticing the old man's look. "Has he not paid you all?"
"No, no, he has but increased the debt," answered the physician, and as he proceeded his manner lost its fiercer characteristics and subsided into gloom. "Do you remember me, Hester, as I was 9 years ago? Even then I was in the autumn of my days, nor was it even the early autumn, so he was pretty old. But all my life had been made up of earnest, studious, thoughtful, quiet years, bestowed faithfully for the increase of mine own knowledge, and faithfully, too, though this latter object was but casual to the other, faithfully for the advancement of human welfare. No life had been more peaceful and innocent than mine. Few lives so rich with benefits conferred. Do you remember me? Was I not, though you might deem me cold, nevertheless a man thoughtful for others, craving little for himself, kind, true, just, and constant, if not warm, affections? Was I not all this?"
"All this and more," said Hester.
"And what am I now?" demanded he, looking at her face and permitting the whole evil within him to be written on his features. "I have already told you what I am, a devil. Who made me so?"
"It was myself," cried Hester, shuddering. "It was I, not less than he. Why have you not avenged yourself on me?"
"I have left you to the scarlet letter," replied Roger Chillingworth. "If that have not avenged me, I can do no more." He laid his finger on it with a smile.
"It has avenged thee," answered Hester Prynne.
"I judge no less," said the physician. "And now, what would you with me touching this man?"
"I must reveal your secret," said Hester firmly.
He must discern you in thy true character. What may be the result, I don't know. But this long debt of confidence due from me to him whose bane and ruin I have been shall at length be paid. So far as concerns the overthrow or preservation of his fair fame and his earthly state, and perchance his life, he is in your hands. Nor do I, whom the Scarlet Letter has disciplined to truth, though it be the truth of red-hot iron entering into soul, nor do I perceive such advantage in his living any longer a life of ghastly emptiness, that I shall stoop to implore thy mercy. Do with him as you will. There is no good for him, no good for me, no good for you. There is no good for little Pearl. There is no path to guide us out of this dismal maze. Woman, I could well nigh pity thee, said Roger Chillingworth, unable to restrain a thrill of admiration too, for there was a quality almost majestic in the despair which she expressed. Had you great elements? You had great elements. Peradventure, hadst thou met earlier with a better love than mine, this evil had not been. I pity for the good that has wasted in thy nature. So Roger Chillingworth said, you know, I could feel sad for you too. You were a great woman too, and if you didn't meet me first, then this whole thing wouldn't be an issue. You would be able to marry him. I'm sad for you, because this has ruined you too. And I you, answered Hester Prynne, for the hatred that has transformed a wise and just man to a fiend. Will you let yet purge it out of you, and be once more human? For if not his sake, then doubly for your own. Forgive, and leave his future retribution to the power that claims it. I said, but now there could be no good event for him, or you, or me, who are here wandering together in this gloomy maze of evil, and stumbling at every step over the guilt wherewith we have strewn our path. Is it not so? There might be good for you, and you alone, since you hast been deeply wronged, and has it at thy will to pardon. Will you give up that only privilege? Will you reject that priceless benefit? Forgive, forgive, forgive. Peace, Hester, peace, cried the old man with gloomy sternness. It is not granted me to pardon. I will not forgive him. I have no such power as you tellest me of. My old faith, long forgotten, comes back to me and explains all that we do, and all that we suffer. By thy first step awry, you didst plant a germ of evil, but since that moment it has all been a dark necessity. You that have wronged me are not sinful, save in a type of typical illusion. Neither am I fiend-like, who have snatched a fiend's office from his hands. It is our fate. Let the black flower blossom as it may. Now go your way, and deal as you will with yonder man. He waved his hand and betook himself again to his employment of gathering herbs.